Welcome to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm your host, Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I'm here every Wednesday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. talking with authors, editors, agents, and poets about writing and everything having to do with it. Tonight my guest is literary agent Amy Rennert. She's an agent with Donohoe and Rennert Literary Agents based in New York, which represents authors in numerous nonfiction genres, including memoir, travel, women's issues, health, spirituality, and pop culture. She also represents literary and commercial fiction. Ms. Rennert represents 1998 National Book Award finalist and Salon Book Award winner Beth Kephart, author of A Slant of Sun, One Child's Courage. Other authors include award-winning journalist Frank Viviano and Marilee Strong, mystery writer John Shannon and Deborah Layton, author of the bestseller Seductive Poison, a Jonestown survivor story of life and death in the People's Temple. Prior to agenting, Ms. Rennert was the editor-in-chief of San Francisco Focus, the leading magazine in Northern California. Under her leadership, the magazine was named a National Magazine Award finalist and earned dozens of awards, including two gold medals for general excellence from the City and Regional Magazine Association. Ms. Rennert was responsible for all of the books and authors' coverage in the magazine. Her interviews with Pat Conroy and Armistead Maupin won Maggie Awards from the Western Publications Association. Ms. Rennert's feature interviews have also appeared in the New York Times Syndicate, the LA Times Syndicate, and the San Jose Mercury News. Ms. Rennert is also the author of Where Can We Go This Weekend, and she's the editor of two books, Exploring the Best Ethnic Restaurants in Northern California, and Helen Mirren, Prime Suspect, A Celebration. Are you there, Amy?
I'm here.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Tell me, how specifically did you become an agent? What attracted you to becoming one?
Well, you know, I've been a lover of books all my life, and there have been very important books in my life. I've been in book publishing ever since ever since I got out of school. Did a little bit of work when I first got out of college for some literary agents in the Bay Area, and then for many years worked in the world of magazines. And I think what drew me back to the world of the book was, it was two things. One, I felt that the magazine world had become more and more marketing-driven, that the stories we got to publish in the magazine were the stories that publishers and advertisers felt would, and advertising people felt would draw ads. And I thought in the book world, even though it's a very marketing-driven world, I could still choose and follow my heart and go with books that I felt passionate about as an agent to take them to market. And I felt that the agent was the best position for me to be in because really as an agent I still get to use my talent as an editor because my own personal feeling is that agents really work as first editors. Good agents work as first editors for their clients until they find the right match, the right editor, and the right house.
And is that through knowing editors, going to conferences and meeting them personally? Or, I mean, what sort of relationship should a person expect their agent has with the editors?
Mm-hmm. Well, first let me tell you, Barbara, in terms of myself, yes, I got to know many of the editors in book publishing when I was the editor-in-chief of San Francisco Focus magazine, which is a city and regional magazine in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I was publishing many of the top writers here, from Dorothy Allison to Anne Lamott and Amy Tan and Armistead Maupin and Pat Conroy when he lived here. And I got to know many of the editors that they were working with them and many of the people actually throughout the publishing business because I was also working with the sales and marketing people and the people who worked on subsidiary rights. And I think it is very important if a writer is looking to work with an agent. I don't think it matters that the agent be in New York. It's good that I say that right since I'm not in New York. My partner is. But I think what's important is that agents are doing business with New York publishers. That the relationship an agent has with editors is very important. But it's not as though you have to be working side by side because so much of this business is done via the phone and the post office and Federal Express and now, of course, email.
Mm-hmm. Of all the nonfiction genres that you represent, is there one or two that are especially popular with editors?
Well, that changes. Let's see. Since we're doing the interview this week, you know, I mean, the answer will be slightly different. But I actually think that the memoir is a genre that is very important and here to stay. Even though that there are editors who will groan when you say that you're bringing them a memoir, I think there has to be something more to it. But I think right now, you know, people are very much looking for true life adventure stories, and probably The Perfect Storm was the first book to take off that got editors and publishers excited about it. But I think that's still a very popular genre within narrative nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And I think often, you know, if there's a story that takes you back in time or to another place, that's important too. I sold a big book earlier this year by a journalist. I work with a lot of journalists, of course. My background as a magazine editor means that I know many journalists. And I sold a book earlier this year by the former, well, not former, actually, by the foreign correspondent for the San Francisco Chronicle. He's based in Paris, and he's now taking a leave to finish the book. And the book is called Blood Washes Blood, and it is based on a true story. It is his account of returning to Sicily to really discover, find out more about the life and death of his namesake, his great-great-grandfather, who had been murdered in Sicily more than 100 years ago. And he's going to go back and recreate the last days of his namesake's life. Mm-hmm. And there was a tremendous fascination with the subject. People were very interested, and it was a great story because it had everything. It had dark family secrets. It dealt with the origins of the mafia. There was a mystery. And I think books like that are of great interest right now.
It's interesting because I seem to hear agents go back and forth about, yes, the memoir is here to stay. No, it's, you know, it's over. And does it come down to a basic tastes?
I think some of it's taste. I think some of it's even semantics. I mean, sometimes when I send things out, I purposely don't use the word memoir. But I think first-person personal accounts, you know, when they're written, what people are really looking for in these memoirs are memoirs that are written that have the feel of a novel. In other words, they've got the pacing and language, and, you know, they're page-turners. So I think it does come down to taste, and I think to some extent if an editor has not had success with some of the memoirs they've been publishing, they might be more shy about publishing, you know, hesitant, rather, to take something new on. But the truth is, if you look in PW, Publishers Weekly, which is the magazine that all of us in the publishing business look at all the time, and I actually recommend that writers look at it from time to time as well, because you can learn an enormous amount about publishing through Publishers Weekly. But they have a page each week called Hot Deals, where they will focus on some of the big deals. And, you know, if they do 15 deals on that page a week, more than half are often memoir or some kind of first-person account.
Mm-hmm. We talked a couple of months ago for an article that will be published in Poets and Writers magazine, in which you will be featured. And you had said that Slant of Sun was, which was a National Book Award finalist, was a book that changed your life. Could you elaborate?
Yeah, I will a little bit. I had actually just had a little bit of a, when I first got the book and it was sent in over the transom, and those are the books agents, you know, we dream to get a book that we don't expect, that is just going to, you know, move us or really make a difference in our life, and also, of course, knock our socks off in terms of the writing. And I received this small book, really, called The Slant of Sun, One Child's Courage by Beth Kephart. And the book was about one little boy, her boy, Jeremy. And he had been diagnosed when he was very young with something called pervasive development disorder. And it's really an ultimately triumphant book that is, it is about Jeremy, but much more than that, it is about children and family and healing and what we can learn from our own children and the children in our life. And it also questions what is normal. And the book was very important to me because I have a nephew and niece who lived relatively close by, and they were important to me and in my life. But it was after reading Beth's book, A Slant of Sun, that something opened up inside me, and the relationship with Jacob and Sarah just shifted enormously.
Hmm.
And
So do you typically judge a project on how you react emotionally, or is it different things at different times? I mean, might you get a book that personally you're not emotionally involved in, but you think it's timely?
I think it is a lot of things. You know, having just said that about my own emotional response to Beth, you know, what knocked me out right away, I mean, her book is really, I think, a triumph of writing and humanity. And the writing was, you know, I mean, Beth is a beautiful writer. And the work, it's the writing and the fact that it is so absorbing and so moving, and you're right in there with her. There's a certain honesty that I think I look for, and I found that in Beth's work. But in everything, the writing, I would say, is probably first and foremost important. That's not to say there aren't important topics from time to time, but I'm always looking for good writing.
So with nonfiction, how important is voice? I mean, it's very important in literary fiction, for instance.
Mm-hmm. And it's important in literary nonfiction, too. But I think in some nonfictions, it's less important. Sometimes it's the expert or the expertise, but I guess for me, a lot of the narrative nonfiction I do, I'm looking for voice and story. I'll tell you one other nonfiction book I sold recently that I'm very excited about. It's called Red House, and it is the story of the oldest continuously lived-in house in all of New England.
Mm-hmm.
And for nearly 300 years, it was lived in by the same family. And the woman writing the book was born in that house. Her parents bought the house from a family that had owned the house for 9, 10, I forget how many generations. And I read a brief essay that she had written in Yankee Magazine, which is a regional publication back east,
mm-hmm.
and responded to both the voice, and Sarah Messer, the author, has a poet's voice and is in fact a poet, and also the story. And in that case, I contacted her and asked whether or not she'd ever considered writing a book on the subject, and it turned out, you know, she had been thinking about it and had been collecting, had a lot of research, and so we began to work over the course of 3 or 4 months on her writing a proposal. And I'm sure you've talked about this on the program, but for nonfiction, we sell books primarily based on proposals. In her case, she didn't have to do a sample chapter because I was able to submit her story from Yankee Magazine as the sample chapter, and we were fortunate and had several publishers interested in bidding on it, and Viking will be the publisher for
mm-hmm.
it.
You're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I'm talking with San Francisco literary agent Amy Rennert. Amy, is it typical for you to scan magazines and contact writers?
Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting cyclical process because unpublished writers are, you know, searching and looking for literary agents and editors to publish their work, and agents spend a lot of time searching publications to find writers, you know, writers who have already been published. I scan publications looking for writers, also looking for ideas for writers I'm already working with, and I think it is fairly typical. I mean, one thing I may do that other agents don't, you know, there are many agents in New York who read Harper's and The New Yorker, you know, every week, and, you know, probably every article or writer in each of those issues, and probably Vanity Fair, too, you know, gets several calls when a big story comes out. But I look beyond the major, you know, national publications and read a lot of city and regional publications as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I always recommend that writers who are interested in being published, I think, should really think about trying to get some shorter pieces published first, even if it's in the local newspaper. I think if you can get book reviews published, you always, in a book review, often get to have a short tagline at the end that might say you're working on a book project.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's helpful.
When a writer submits a project to an agent, or an agent submits that project to an editor, and it gets rejected with a response, something like, oh, we like the project, we like the writing, but we don't think it's very marketable. What does a writer or an agent, if they're trying to sell it to an editor, what do you make of that?
Well, the first thing you do is you groan, right? But, you know, I should say, you know, I think there's probably not an author, but when I do writers' conferences, I always start by asking those who haven't been rejected to raise their hands, and, you know, there's never a hand that goes up. I mean, The Good Earth was rejected 14 times before publication and winning the Pulitzer Prize. You know, Alex Haley, who wrote Roots, you know, dozens and dozens of rejections. John Grisham, one of the most popular commercial authors today, you know, I think was rejected by more than 15 publishers and 30 agents. Even Dr. Seuss had 24 rejections, you know, all mm-hmm. for different reasons.
Sure.
And I think, unfortunately, the reason writers and agents hear most right now is, you know, for marketing reasons. We're not, you know, we love this book, but we just don't think we'll find a large enough market. And the whole book business has changed so significantly with all of the mergers, but also with the book superstore chains and now Amazon, but particularly with because of, you know, Barnes & Noble and the chains. Often what happens now is that books have, you know, it's almost like when you open a movie, if it doesn't hit big, it disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening, unfortunately, with books also, with, you know, certainly with novels. I mean, nonfiction often don't disappear as fast, but I really think if a novel doesn't hit in the first 2 or 3 months, it's off the shelves to make room for the next one. And in retail, bookstores are one of the few retailers that get to return books that haven't sold. So as a result, publishers have become much more careful about what they agree to publish. Almost all publishers have cut back, major publishers have cut back their lists in recent years and are doing smaller press runs. And, you know, I've talked to a few publishers, editors, you know, who have actually bought books and say, you know, sometimes I just have to go with my heart and my passion, and that's enough to convince, you know, they'll get one or two opportunities over the course of the year to, you know, convince sales and marketing people to let them make a decision that is based on the heart and,
mm-hmm.
and passion and belief in a book. And ultimately, that passion that an editor has is very important because it will make a difference. It may not get it through, but it will make a difference. But more and more, sales and marketing people are sitting in on the editorial meetings where decisions are made whether books are acquired.
And that at one time not too long ago was pretty unusual, wasn't it?
Yes, it's really shifted. You know, the good news is, though, that the number of small independent publishers has really increased. And, you know, in some ways the chances for a writer to get published are better than ever before, but it takes a lot of patience and persistence, I think.
Is there a typical amount of times you would submit a project before you give up?
Personally, as an agent, I don't like to take on any project unless I feel that I am going to stay with it for a while. I've heard stories about agents who like to send something out, and if it doesn't sell the first go-round, you know, then they might be ready to move on. I don't think there's any one particular number. When I send a project out, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, I usually send to several editors. And what I might do if something were, let's say I send a project out or a novel out to six editors, what I would do when we got the responses both in writing and through conversation is evaluate with the author whether or not there was a consistent, if something doesn't sell, evaluate whether there was a consistent reason for the rejection. Was there something that to go back to and look at and revisit in the book? The same would be true on the nonfiction side. Should something be done differently? But I will always take something out, you know, more than one or two rounds. But there is no set number to answer the question. At
mm-hmm.
least for me, there isn't.
Mm-hmm. You also handle short stories.
Yeah, I've had tremendous success actually with short story collections.
Isn't this quite unusual for an agent to take on short stories?
Well, now maybe that's going to change because right now the, The Girl's Guide to Hunting and Fishing and Nathan Englander's book for the Relief of Unbearable Urges are two short story collections that are actually getting a lot of attention, and both are first books for these authors. But yes, it is rather unusual because the truth is, you know, generally speaking, it is more difficult to sell short story collections by unknown writers than it is novels. But I've always been a big fan of the short story. And I do work with writers, and I've had some success.
Now, when you take on a collection of short stories, have they usually been published in journals or magazines beforehand, and you think that, yes. that there's a good chance an editor will like that and like the work?
Well, I would say yes, but not, you know, in some cases, one or two stories have been published before. I don't know that I've ever worked with a writer. I think I have not worked with a writer on a short story collection if that writer hasn't had any stories published previously. But sometimes it's just one or two. And yes, editors really look for that. It doesn't have to be major magazines like Harper's, although, of course, that's fantastic. But literary journals are very important, too. And you mentioned Poets and Writers before, which I think is a great publication for all writers to be looking at for many reasons. Maybe I should mention now, too, I had said earlier that I worked with Anne Lamott and actually helped launch her career when I was at San Francisco Focus. We'd done several stories before Operating Instructions came out. But I think her writing book, Bird by Bird, is one of the best books about writing for both practical instruction and inspiration.
Mm-hmm. How involved in editing do you become? With your writing, I mean, are you there giving them editorial suggestions on either rewriting a proposal or working on a story or?
I'm very involved in the editorial process throughout, but especially in that time before I send the book out to editors. So when working on a proposal or a novel or a short story collection, there's a lot of email back and forth, and there are often several drafts done before I feel I'm ready to take something out. And I do more of a big picture edit. I mean, I'm not going through. Mm-hmm. I go through it line by line, but it's more big picture thinking about structure. Are the opening pages working? And the opening pages, by the way, are crucial in any manuscript or proposal because those opening pages are usually going to determine whether or not an editor is going to continue reading.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very involved in that part of it. And I like it. I mean, as an agent, that's really a creative work. Quite honestly, I enjoy that much more than negotiating the contract.
Well, and how do you work your own writing in, actually? I mean, you're an author.
Yes, but I don't work that much in right now. You know, I keep a journal and I'm writing, but I'm not, you know, I'm not sending my work out to be published right now. I'm really enjoying, I'm a young agent in that, you know, I've been doing this now for about 3 years, and I'm very excited about it. I'm fascinated by the publishing industry. You know, I read everything I can, not just in terms of what comes to me, but also about publishing, and that's something I recommend that writers do as well. I mean, look at Martin Arnold's column in the New York Times on Thursday. Look at Publishers Weekly. Read the New York Observer. I mean, read Poets and Writers. And as a result, I haven't had that much time to write, but that's okay for right now.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a real short break, allow you to get something to drink, and allow our readers or our listeners to get up and stretch. So please stay tuned, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Amy Rennert, a literary agent in San Francisco. Stay tuned. Welcome back. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and this is Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and I'm talking with San Francisco literary agent Amy Rennert. Describe your dream client for me.
Dream client writes like a dream. You know, dream client is a beautiful writer who has something important to say, and that can be for nonfiction or fiction. But I think what's also important for me, a dream client is someone who understands a little bit about the publishing business, understands how the process works, wants to be involved in the process. A dream client meets deadlines, gets proposals or manuscripts done when they're supposed to be done. Dream client, of course, also appreciates any and all of my counsel. And I think that's...
Do you like to take on writers who seem to have more than one project in them?
Is that something you talk about? Yeah, I mean, actually, I'm usually... What I'm most interested in as an agent is a relationship with a writer. I'm really looking to be involved in a writer's career, and so it's not one book. I mean, there are occasions where I'll work with a writer on just one book, but what I'm really looking for is a relationship with a writer, someone who wants to spend their time, has to spend their time writing. And I feel blessed in that I'm able to help writers. This is something I couldn't do in the magazine business. I usually couldn't pay even what a story was really worth in terms of the time it would take. But I'm blessed as an agent in that I get to help fulfill writers' dreams so that they can do what they should be doing, which is writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the writer-agent relationship. I think it's an important one, and I'm fortunate, too, in that I care about my writers, and I have good relationships and friendships with most of them.
What qualities in an agent do you think should be most important to a writer?
I think an agent serves so many different roles, but I think an agent has to be a good listener. I think an agent has to be, you know, a sounding board, really, but also I think an agent has to be available. You know, someone who's not coming in to just make a deal and then disappear, but someone who believes in the writer, who can encourage a writer to do his or her best work, and who can stay with the writer throughout the entire process.
Do you think it's a good idea for writers and agents to meet before either signing a contract or deciding, yes, we're going to work together?
I don't know that writers and agents have to meet before doing that, but I think it's very important that writers have a conversation with their agents. I mean, unfortunately, most writers don't get to have conversations with agents until or unless agents are interested in working with them. You probably know this for most agents you talk with, but we want queries by mail. We want to meet the work before we meet the writer, if you will. And so a writer doesn't really get to ask many questions. But I firmly believe that once an agent expresses an interest in a writer's work, that it is clear communication up front about what can be expected from the relationship. And a writer should find out, if an agent's interested in his or her work, what does that mean? You know, when would they think about sending it to publishers? How many publishers would they send it to? How do they think about marketing it? How many people work in the agent's office? How many clients does the agent have? What's the best way to communicate? Does an agent prefer to communicate primarily by email or mail or on the phone? You know, who is there someone else in the office that a writer could talk to if the agent is not available? I think those are all very important questions. And I think if a meeting is possible, that's great, because good chemistry, of course, always helps. But I don't think it's necessary. I guess in the instance if a writer, you know, had three agents calling, you know, within the same week all wanting to represent the work, then the writer might say, well, to make this decision, I want to go out and meet with each of the agents. Maybe then it does make sense. And sometimes, you know, I'm taking that further. When I send work to editors and publishers, when I know there's going to be big interest, as there was in Frank Viviano's book, Blood Washes Blood, or in Beth Kephart's next book, which is Into the Tangle of Friendship, then it might make sense to have meetings with editors.
Mm-hmm. When you receive a submission, do you read the whole submission, or do you know by the time you've reached the end of the first page or the first paragraph whether it's something that's for you?
It's a mix. I always read more than the first page, and I actually have an assistant who reads for me and someone outside the office who reads too, because I get a lot of submissions. But in the same way I said earlier that, you know, you want to keep editors reading, the same is true when writers send their work to agents. And no, I don't have time to read, you know, all pages of everything that comes in. So I usually have a very good sense from the first 30 pages.
How many submissions do you receive in 1 week?
It varies, but between 25 and 50. I think these days agents are getting more, you know, this is a small operation, so that's a lot. But I think agents these days get more submissions than editors. In fact, we serve as the screeners, really, for editors and publishers, because most major publishers in New York, you know, won't look at work unless it comes through an agent.
Mm-hmm. What is one myth you believe writers have about agents that you would like to explode here and now?
Just one?
Oh, ten, I don't know.
Well, I guess, I don't know if I have to choose one, but, you know, this myth that 15% is such a large amount of money and that, you know, wouldn't writers be better off doing this on their own? And
what you're talking about is the agent's cut.
Yes, agents, the agent, you know, agents do not earn any money for the upfront work that we do. We get a commission, and it's, I should mention, it's 15% of what the author gets in the advance and royalties. And I guess the myth is that the agent only does the deal. And that's what is not true. I think a good agent is involved throughout the entire process. I think going along with that is that just as most editors are not in it for the money, so to speak, neither are agents.
Mm-hmm.
We're in it because of a great love for books. Or I should speak for myself, anyway. I guess that, you know, the myth is that there are no real generalizations one should make about agents.
Mm-hmm. This is Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and I'm talking with Amy Rennert, a literary agent in San Francisco. What do you think about agents who charge minimal upfront fees, either for reading or?
I personally don't believe in it, and I think if a writer is going to choose to go that route, that they absolutely should find out what are they going to get for that upfront reading fee. In other words, is someone going to pay $200 and then receive back a letter saying, you know, just what you said earlier, that, oh, I like your writing very much, but I don't think there's a market, so I won't be able to represent you. I think writers should be very wary of paying any kind of fee. It's our business to read books, and I don't believe agents should earn any money until they earn money for their writers.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that there aren't writers who should work with editorial consultants or book doctors before they approach agents or editors, because I believe, really, as a writer or as an agent, you only have one chance to take the book out, and you want it to be as good as it can be. And I really recommend that most writers share their work either with colleagues or other people whose opinion they value before they bring the work to the attention of an agent.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we talked about dream clients.
Let's
talk about the opposite kind of client for a moment. And, you know, that's the client who, the writer who calls you and wants to take you to lunch or talk for an hour about their work before you've ever seen any of it, and then they send it in a package that takes more time to unravel than it does to read. And then for the next 2 weeks, they're faxing in changes and additions. You know, let me send you, you know, I'm resending over chapter two. And I mean, that really happens. So I think it is very important that writers share their work and get editorial opinion, even if it's in a writer's group or through going to book conferences. I think conferences are very important because it does give you an opportunity to meet agents and editors, which otherwise writers wouldn't be able to do.
Actually, that was my next question. I'm curious how necessary conferences are for writers who are looking for an agent. I mean, is it that personal connection that can convince an agent to take you on because they like you?
It's very rare, because really we have to like the work. But where the value lies, I think, in going to conferences is that often at conferences there'll be an agent's panel, or you get a one-on-one session, so you could get a valuable critique. But I think a writer has an opportunity to ask a lot of questions of agents so that they can get a general sense for what agents do and what the work is, but also they can then determine whether or not they want to send the work to that agency. I don't think just meeting someone means that that will lead to a book, but you get a chance to share your work with other writers. Usually there's an opportunity for agents or editors to critique the work. I actually did just send out something today by a woman who has a new weekly column in the San Francisco Chronicle, and we added to the list an editor who she did have a good connection with at a writers' conference in Aspen last year.
Mm-hmm. Regarding nonfiction book proposals, what do you consider the most important part? Or is there a most important part? The overview, the bio, the text itself?
I think it's probably the overview and the sample chapter are the most important. The overview is great because it's really, it gives you a chance to do something you don't have the chance to do in fiction, and that is it becomes your sell page. You get to say not only what the book is, but why it's important and what benefit it serves for readers. So I think that's very important. But, of course, the sample chapter is absolutely key as well. About the author, I mean, does it help if you've been published and have clips and you're an expert? Of course it does. An expert more, not so much for the memoir, but if you're doing a book on health or women's health, for instance. But I think it's going to be the writing and the overview that are most important. The chapter-by-chapter outline is important because it shows that you have, you know, some sense for the internal structure of the book. I don't think I've ever taken a book from proposal to book where the chapter-by-chapter outline didn't change during the course of researching, reporting, or writing the book, but it shows a publisher up sense that up front, rather, that you've got a good sense for structure.
To what extent should a writer trust their agent?
Well, what do you mean, Barbara?
Well, I mean in terms of, you know, should a writer, once you sign up with an agent, should you, as a writer, just, you know, basically totally trust your agent that he or she is doing the right thing?
I mean, that is a good question, actually, because it gets back to something I said earlier. I mean, once you sign up with an agent, I've heard some horror stories at conferences. You know, if a year goes by and you haven't really heard that your manuscript's gone out or what's happened to it, I would say you have a major problem. And I think ongoing communication is good, and that's why I say that writers should establish up front what kind of communication is going to work best. And I also think a writer's entitled to ask for, you know, if there are rejection letters that come back, you know, to see those, but also to get a list of who will be looking at a proposal or manuscript, you know, what editors, what publishing houses, and to get a sense for when the, find out when the project went out. I personally would hesitate as a writer to sign an agreement with an agent that gave them 3 years or 5 years or you know, an unspecified amount of time. I mean, we have an agency agreement. We, of course, are looking for a long-term relationship with writers, but in the agreement, if either side is not happy, the writer or agent can terminate give 30 days notice and terminate, because there's no sense to continue if the relationship is not working. But now we can get back to another myth, and that is if an agent isn't able to sell a book, it doesn't mean necessarily that it's the agent's fault. And I think, you know, writer and agent have to be able to, you know, look carefully and, you know, make careful considerations about how to move forward. And maybe it means working on another book first. But if a writer feels he or she can't trust the agent, then I think there's a real problem. And the writer probably shouldn't be in a relationship with that person. But I think the more communication you can have with your agent, the better.
What if an agent isn't able to sell a book? Say he or she has sent it out, a half dozen times, a dozen times, however many times, at which point the writer feels that perhaps they're better off with another agent. Does that often make sense?
The real challenge there is that a writer has to tell that next agent the history of the book or project, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise everybody, it's going to create a mess for everybody. And, you know, that next agent is going to look carefully at whether or not he or she should take on the project if it's already been to six or a dozen or even two dozen editors. Now, having said that, I sold a big book this year that had actually, it had gone out a year ago. It had been sent out as a manuscript by another agent to about 10 editors, and it didn't sell. And the writer then left that agent and approached me, and I was very excited about the manuscript, but I also saw that it wasn't a final manuscript. It really wasn't ready to go out to editors, and so I worked with that writer on a proposal and sent out the proposal and was able to sell it that way. But I think it's going to depend on each circumstance. I don't think there's one answer, but I know that a writer's going to have a more difficult time. And by the way, I don't think the writer has to tell an agent in his or her introductory letter that the book has a history. But when the agent expresses interest, then the writer needs to let the agent know what the book's history is.
Yes. Do you believe good agents have highly developed instincts regarding what is good and what will sell?
Yeah, I do, because this is a business of instincts. The truth is none of us can really predict what's going to be a bestseller unless, of course, we know the author's going to be, you know, Oprah's top pick, or the author's name, you know, is John Grisham or has a string of bestsellers. I think instinct and eye are very important.
Interesting. Have you ever received anything that, say, was not in great shape? Maybe it had a couple of typos. Maybe, you know, it didn't look as professional as it should, but you had a feeling about it, or do the two kind of go hand in hand, where the work is professional, the feeling you have is there?
It's funny you should ask that question now, because over the course of the last several weeks, I have been receiving, actually from a bookstore owner, a submission that is handwritten on yellow lined paper, and I'm getting it in installments, and I'm just absolutely fascinated by it. So this is an instance where it is standing out, mm-hmm. for really being different. Usually, a few typos, that ultimately won't stop me as someone who's been a writer, you know. I mean, but I think if there are glaring errors and they're consistent, that's going to be really problematic.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually indicative of a larger problem.
If a writer writes all sorts of stuff, fiction, nonfiction, screenplays, is it typical for the writer to have different agents for each of those types of projects, is the ideal to have one agent who can handle it all and maybe, you know, have a sub-agent?
I think, for instance, on the screenplay, I would work with a sub-agent. I work with different sub-agents depending on the projects. And usually what I recommend writers do, if they have one next project that they think is right to send out, to send the project they're most excited about to an agent and then include in the cover letter the other kinds of work mm-hmm. that they do. Most agents don't specialize. I mean, for all agents, there are categories that they don't handle. For instance, I don't do science fiction or, you know, the romance genre, the Harlequin books. But most agents do handle a real mix. There are some who specialize and do primarily children's or primarily food and wine books, for instance. But usually you handle a mix. And it's better if you can get one agent who will then work with other people, but you're primarily working with one agent. I think that's better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what an agent wants also. They don't want to, as an agent, if I think someone's a good fiction writer and nonfiction writer, it doesn't make sense for me to just handle one, because you also want to strategize and determine, you know, what's next. Are we going to go out next with that novel, or are we going to move to nonfiction?
And do you have writers who go from nonfiction to fiction and back again?
Yeah, Beth Kephart, mm-hmm. the author of A Slant of Sun and now this book on friendship, her next book will be a novel
mm-hmm.
that I take out.
And how is that in terms of your marketing it to editors? Do they frown upon it? Does it matter if the work is good? You know, I know that in, say, fiction, if you're a mystery writer, you're frowned upon, say, now becoming a literary writer, or
they'll just ask you to change your name.
Right.
The ideal situation is that you also have an editor at a publishing house, and in Beth's case, we do now at Houghton Mifflin and Anton Mueller, where ideally we'll be doing books with him. You know, we're looking for a match, you know, because she writes both literary fiction and literary nonfiction. The hope is to stay with the same editor and the same house. But in that other instance, you're right. Editors often do frown upon it, and so you really have to strategize. If you're staying within the same house, you want to strategize with the house and the publisher.
Mm-hmm. Beth Kephart, by the way, will be on this show, I think, the first Wednesday in October.
Terrific. She'll be
yeah.
great. Have a read for you, too.
Definitely. What about, do you receive proposals or queries that are gimmick-ridden? And how do you respond to that? Has anyone ever sent you a pizza with, like, a query letter on the top? And
oh, yes, or an apple, or money, or wine from time to time. I would say save those things until after we work. we'll still look at them, you know. I mean, it's, again, you know, mentioning this guy writing on the yellow line paper. You know, sometimes doing something a little bit different stands out, but personally, I don't really respond to gimmicks. It certainly is not going to sway me to work with somebody.
Mm-hmm. Do you still have time to read books other than your clients or other than submissions?
I make the time. It's very difficult, but especially in the summer, mm-hmm. I always, for instance, I did just read The Girl's Guide to Hunting and Fishing, but I really, and I read The Reader before that, I set aside time during the summer months where I'm always reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard.
Have you ever, we're coming down to the end of the hour now, and I wanted to also ask you if you've ever had the occasion to reject somebody that later you went, now why did I do that?
Well, no one is immediately coming to mind, mm-hmm. but for instance, I just sent out this memoir today by a San Francisco Chronicle writer named Susan Parker, and the book is called Tumbling After, and we won't have time for me to tell you that much about it, but it's the story of a catastrophic bicycling accident and its aftermath, and it spares no details, but it's ultimately a triumphant story. But originally, 2 years ago when she sent it to me, I think she hadn't had enough life experience with this new life that she was in, and it wasn't ready. And it wasn't even ready enough for me to say, okay, if you just do this or rework this. But so I had to say, I can't choose to represent you now. But I said, but I think you show up tremendous promise, and I would like to see it again. And here are some things I think you should do in the interim. And one of them was to attend a couple of writers' conferences and even take some classes and just be spending time with other writers. And a month ago, she came back, and I was very, very enthusiastic and excited, and we've been working closely this last month to get it ready to take out.
She took your advice?
Yeah, it was great.
That's great. How important are titles?
Titles are very important because they're really your first introduction, you know, the title page. It may change, but it's important. It needs to be something that, you know, that an editor or agent's going to remember, and I think ultimately they're very important in the selling of books, too. But you just want to do something that's a grabber, even though it might change.
Amy, do you want to tell our listeners how to find you?
Oh, I'm so happy you asked that question. Yes, I've just recently moved out of San Francisco over the Golden Gate Bridge to Tiburon. So let me give the address. I do prefer to be queried by mail, but I will give both the mail address and email.
Okay.
The agency is Donohue & Rennert. D-O-N-N-A-U-D, and Rennert, R-E-N-N-E-R-T. And my partner Janice is based in New York. I'm here, and the address is 98 Main Street, Suite 302, Tiburon, and I'll spell it, T as in Tommy, I, B as in boy, U-R-O-N as in Nancy, California. Boy, it was easier when I was in San Francisco. 94920. And should I give the email, Barbara, or no?
Sure.
Okay, it's arennert@pacbell, P-A-C-B-E-L-L, .net.
And Rennert is R-E-N-N?
E-R-T.
E-R-T.
Yes.
Well, I sure thank you for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure talking with you, Barbara.
The hour has flown by. And anyway, thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you to your listeners as well.
Definitely. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Oh, that was a good one. She's wonderful. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett at KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. If you have comments about Writers on Writing, please email me at bdemarcob@aol.com. Chris is on next with Music for Lunch Pals. And also, if you know anyone who would like to listen to my show or any show here on KUCI, the internet address is kuci.org. I'll be here next week from 6 to 7 with mystery writer Robert Ferrigno. The music you heard at the beginning and middle of the show is blues and jazz guitarist Brian Barrett. We'll close with another favorite, Etta James. In the meantime, take care. Thank you for listening. Now get to work. It's all about writing like there's no tomorrow.